Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I'll tell you the book I've chosen as my favorite book, and it may make some people's hearts sink because it's a book that is associated with difficulty, whereas in fact it should be associated with joy. It's the novel Ulysses by James Joyce. It is, to me, the most perfectly written book, or perhaps the second most perfectly written book in the English language. It may be that The Great Gatsby is as perfect, word for word, just in terms of English. But Ulysses is deeper and richer and wider and is comic, whereas The Great Gatsby is a tragic novel. And I think all great art is comic art, because it's comic art is about joining. The last word of Ulysses is yes. In fact, the last three words are yes, yes, yes. It's the most affirmative book. As you may know, it's the retelling of Homer's Odyssey, the great first epic, really, after the Iliad, the greatest story ever told. And it's told in one day in Dublin on the 16th of June. And instead of Ulysses, this great Greek hero, there's this little Jewish man called Leopold Bloom and his wife Molly. And it's the search for a son he never really had, in the same way that Ulysses searches for his son in the original. It's hard to explain because every chapter has an organ, a colour, a sense. The language is developed to a pitch of modernity that, as I say, some people find difficult. I have no idea what it's like in Dutch. I can't imagine how you would translate it. But if your English is good enough, read it, and you'll be astonished by how beautiful it is. And it's a book like no other that you can return to again and again and again and again.
And that was Stephen Fry talking about James Joyce's classic Ulysses. And that is our inspiration for tonight's early celebration of Bloomsday. Bloomsday is actually going to be next Friday, but as this is a bi-weekly poetry show, I wanted to do our tribute to James Joyce and Ulysses and Bloomsday before the day actually passed, as opposed to after. And with that, I'm going to make our introduction, which is welcome to In Our Craft or Sullen Art on Late Night Poets. I'm your host. My name is Richard Weissman. And my co-host is normally Neutron Bomb. She is on hiatus, but she will be back in July. In the meantime, we've got a substitute co-host who our friends at Late Night Poets know and love, and that is Pam. Let me bring her on the air.
Hello, Richard. How's it going?
Hi, Pam. Good, good. How about you? How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. I am looking forward to hanging out with you and other cool poets. And, of course, this awesome lineup of poetry you have is going to be great to delve into. And I apologize if people can hear the dog barking, but we have somebody spending some time here at the house that's a stranger to the dog. And he's going to be spending some time, demonstrating how he can protect his family, even though he only weighs 15 pounds.
You know, sometimes the smaller they are, the tougher they are. Our dog is a mix. He's 40 pounds. And he likes to say that it's pure muscle, and he's a tough little guy, even though he's just a sweetheart.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
So I know that whole Napoleon complex they have going on. I do have, I believe, Laurent on hold. Let me bring him on. Hey, is that Laurent?
Good evening. Good evening to you.
Hey, Laurent.
Hey, welcome.
Hey, Pam. Hey, Richard.
Hi. So now that we're here, I'm going to ask, did you guys hear that intro, Stephen Fry talking about Ulysses and why it was his favorite book?
Did you hear it, Pam?
I wish I didn't.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's pretty short. You can find it on YouTube. It's around 2 minutes long, which is perfect for our show since the show is only 2 hours. What did you think of it, Pam?
I liked it. First of all, I have to say I really like Stephen Fry. You know, he's intelligent. Mm-hmm. He's funny. I've actually considered before doing a contest with quotes by him, because it would be interesting and fun to see what kind of poetry that inspired. You know, I still have not read Ulysses, and it's probably not going to happen by this year's Bloomsday, maybe next, you know. But there is something, I tell you, there is something about hearing somebody, anybody, you know, especially the people that you admire, their intellect and their humor, talk about their favorite book and the way his voice lit up. And what I particularly liked was in the beginning how he says that the book is oftentimes related or connected with confusion when really it should be connect joy. And so I really thought it was a great choice on your part for an introduction for tonight's show.
Thank you. Yeah, and you know, that is my kind of like secret wish in doing all these, is that it turns people on to the authors that we're showcasing and gets them to read the books. And just to kind of pitch even a little further, it's so easy nowadays because we have these audios, so you can actually just listen to the whole book on YouTube. You don't even have to actually crack open the physical document. So pretty accessible stuff. And I have to say they do a great job. The people that are reading it just do wonderful jobs with it. So that's my plug. And it's a comedy. You know, how can you go wrong with laughing? And it is very funny. It kind of holds up, too. It's over 100 years old, and it still kind of holds up and feels fresh and new and relatable even to modern audiences, I feel. And I guess with that we'll dig in, because we do have a full boat. We actually had 17 rights. A couple were without permission, but what I did was, you know, I've been doing these for a couple of years now, so I went into the vault and pulled some really good ones from last year and gotten permission from some poets that wrote for us last year. So we've got a really tight lineup. And with that,
nice.
Pam, I am turning it over to you.
All right. Well, we have first up Sandscapes by Orenz. And we have a SoundCloud for that whenever you're ready, Richard.
Yep. So here it goes.
Sandscapes by Orenz. Another dreary day shuffles its feet on April's spine. Paris has seven hills, and all the seats are taken in the park. The fountains fill with spring, forgotten novels waving from silent benches. Sandpits are for building castles, for wasting away to the sound of children's laughter. Les Tuileries covers the clouds with dust. Crossroads empty into straight, hard lines. Thermopylae and narrows, red with evening traffic. My words, just another loop in the gorging web. A drone twangs loose. Down to my death. In the green bottle, I see a field of reeds. Yet I am a woman, enfolding a desert. Not one drop. Not one sigh. Nothing comes over me. Nothing comes over me. Quote Shakespeare and do not fear the footnotes. All unfathomable fingers holding up the flame in a sip of water. Everything. Statues of ancient kings. Billboard rabbits running on cosmic power. A noose thrown onto Cleopatra's burnished throne. blossoms slip through my grasp till it's dark. Even the sewers of Paris have tour guides. In my dream, my heart is a tea bag, steeped, wrung, one too many times. Dunes billow like bolts of silk. It is easy to lie down. Dried blood is the sepia of old photographs, the color of regrets and wilted roses. Sheath the knife. Let the snakes writhe in peace and lay adamantine eggs. Feather light upon the golden sands, bone-brown sands, where Midas's thumb runs black. I wake into another dream. Karma is a mosquito, my hands stained with my own blood. The sun drops into the horizon's hourglass. The stars come and go in a trickle. They speak. You can't wake from history. Build up your heart. Kindness is its sacred geometry. Google kindness. For good measure, Google meaning. At all corners of the sky, the wind shouts back. End poem.
Wow. Thank you to the SoundCloud Orange. Amazing. So before the show, Pam, you had asked me what we should kick off with. And I had read this one. It was kind of a late entry into the contest, and I read it just this morning, and I was just blown away with it. And so I figured, what a wonderful way to start our celebration, early celebration of Bloomsday. And Laurent, if we can start off comments with you, what'd you think of Sandscapes?
Phenomenal piece. You said you were blown away. I'm almost speechless. This is a metaphorical tour de force. Very large canvas on the part of this writer who brings in elements from history, from a variety of places. The narrative is, it's, in my mind, is riveting. It was hard to break away for any reason. I like the SoundCloud is very good, but the words stand firmly by themselves. Each vignette, unique, powerful, speaking, just powerful. My Lord, sometimes you hear something you like so much, you have trouble expressing yourself. That's the way I feel about this one. This is just a phenomenal piece.
Yeah, I have to agree. I was really blown away by it. It kind of leaves you speechless. Great comment. And Pam, your thoughts?
Oh my goodness, yeah, this is brilliant. It's got amazing imagery and metaphors, beautifully written vignette. I like how, to me, it speaks on the idea of trying to find purpose and self-worth in the ugliness of the past. And it takes us, as Laurent was mentioning, throughout history. And there's so many parts that really speak to you or to me. And, you know, and the mention of dreams over and over again gives it a wonderful, surreal feel and yet at the same time remains relatable. In my dream, my heart is a teabag, steeped, wrung one too many times. Dunes billow like bolts of silk. I love those lines. And then I also like where she mentions, in a trickle they speak, you can't wake from history. Build up your heart. Kindness is its sacred geometry. I like the mention of the sacred geometry and how the idea of kindness is something that should connect us all. So absolutely wonderful write and very well done.
Great comment there, Pam. Yeah, I too really love this one. I thought it was a wonderful way to start us out. Just such a strong offering of poetry. It was inspired by one of my favorite lines from Joyce's Ulysses as a historian, especially, which is, history, Stephen said, is a nightmare from which I am trying to awake. And I thought it truly an aesthetically beautiful poem. And she handles history in a muralistic, metaphorical fashion, as opposed to either what most historians do, which is microcosm. You look at, you know, one family, or you look at a king in order to tell the story, the history of that era, or you do this broad macrocosm where you tell the story of the Civil War or whatever it is. Instead, that muralistic handling, which is so appropriate for poetry as well, works quite well. And to me, it was almost like reminiscent of those traditional Japanese paintings, the pre-modern era, where they do a single brush stroke to give us the essence of a flower or a vase. And that's what it kind of felt like to me, because the topic is just so vast. And yet we get a sense of history in toto as a nightmare from which we are trying to awake. And I like the fact that it was hopeful, you know, that as you said, Pam, that the ending is a hopeful ending. Build up your heart. Kindness is its sacred geometry. Google kindness. So, yeah, just a wonderful piece. Okay, Pam, where would you like to go next?
All right. Well, up next we have Bloomsday by Ima Rima. And Laurent, would you give that a read for us, please?
Yes. Yes, I will. Bloomsday. Leopold Bloom was hero for James Joyce's novel Ulysses. Then on June 16th, 1904, while in his Dublin habitat, Bloom was despairing of his life, with some gloomy thoughts going to the affair by Molly, his wife. He was not sure of what he'd do. Bloom wandered through the city on an odyssey to try to find purpose for what had come and gone. Nothing really came to mind. Each June 16th, there'd be a ray of worldwide homage to Bloom's Day. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Yeah, I really like this one. You know, it's a great tribute to Bloom, the everyman anti-hero who, in living out an ordinary day, shows the extraordinary embedded therein. And quite brief, you know, 81 words, and yet we kind of get the essence of the whole story of Ulysses, which is quite a remarkable thing, considering Ulysses runs, I don't know, 600, 700 pages, I forget. I think it depends on whether it's hardcover or paperback. But yeah, so quite a remarkable accomplishment to do that in a brevity. And Pam, your thoughts?
You know what? Absolutely. I have to agree. You know, as always, Ima Rima has great rhyme and flow. Only 81 words to pay tribute to such an epic historical novel. I really like his attention to detail and how he packed so many wonderful tidbits of information and paid tribute to Bloom's Day and the celebration of it. You know, two things I actually learned today, which you probably already knew, but I learned that while I was doing some reading and researching, that James Joyce the novel Ulysses didn't get published till he was 40 years old. And the other thing I learned, which I thought was really interesting and fun, was that he chose the date of June 16th because it was the date of the first sexual encounter that he had with Nora, who was his girlfriend at the time and then became his wife. But yeah, this was definitely a great write by Ima Rima. Wonderful tribute.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, it's kind of a bawdy thing, you know, especially not so much for us nowadays, but back in 1922 when the novel was published, you know, the idea of immortalizing the day that, you know, that your girlfriend tossed you off somewhere in the back of a whatever. You know,
definitely
it's quite shocking.
You make it sound so cheap, Richard.
Well, you know, there's a certain kind of innocence.
No,
I mean,
there isn't.
You know,
come on.
There's no, they're not married. There's no intercourse. So it's kind of a humorous thing too, which is, I think, part of the point too.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay, and Laurent, we'll give you final word.
I thought in the beginning, I was a little puzzled. It seemed a little bit awkward, but then I saw what Ima was doing, and I had to smile because he hits upon a couple of the salient points of the book. So you're right. In a very short sentence, he manages to encapsulate some of the high points in an entertaining way. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, great job. Good comment. Okay, Pam, I see you have the next one up.
Yes, Away by Ben Hart. And go ahead, Richard, and give that a read for us, please.
Okay, so this is Away by Ben Hart. Baptize me in earth, bury me in sky. Grant me a place on the stage of your eyes before sleep starts to weigh. Set me adrift in the dark. I'm not bereaved that you get to be ocean. And I only ripple the halos between where I am unrained. You shall have the heavens, that orchard of stars, to grow amongst, and thus become a forest afar. That in the absence of wind is still swaying, because whatever you are remains astray in seasons and tides, deep but not empty, like javelins of light, running through old hallways in a daydream. And when it ends, at the doors that open onto nothing, you'll find yourself ashore, no longer pulled apart by moonbeams, and you will find a wild beyond where mountain and motion meet, not as enemies, but as monuments to the times we knew defeat. You will know you are released to war still not. I have been waiting for the reinforcements to come, forgetting I was the one who carried them here to where there were no steps further. It's not too late. I feel the breath of the army in the wake and the weight of their hands on my shoulder. With God on our side, and so too opposed, the greatest test of the human heart is how far it will carry kindness. My father knew mercy, but not for himself. Perhaps after my lowest hour, I'll bring him home as well and pay back my debt as I square his. It's not too late to find something to give. I know I shall give everything when I hear my brother's call. Only death is our armistice. Poets at war, burn us all, and watch phoenixes soar over Damien's halls. 3. Home. The eagle knows the way, like the shepherd, the river, and the rain. Fear is your shadow, like the hunter, the wind, and the narrow. Look up and find yourself already flying. No home, though not astray. I'm sorry I couldn't still mother. and a poem. And Laurent, if we could start the comments with you.
Laurent thinks that you're in deep trouble when it comes time to judge. That's it. The eagle knows the way, like the shepherd, the river, and the rain. Here is your shadow, like the hunter, the winds, the barrow. Look up and find yourself already flying, no home, but not astray. Doesn't that speak deliciously sometimes to the space we find ourselves in, the voyage that we have to make? Another one, it's not too late. I feel the breath of the army in the wake, weight of their hands on their shoulder. There's so many things that pressure on us, so many experiences that change us. And the army can be one of those places, even though it may be metaphorical, but in this case, since it's named so much, which I think is a place in Vietnam, maybe it was an actual physical test. There's so many standards in here that speak to his path through life. Set me adrift in the dark. I'm not bereaved that you get to be ocean, and I only ripple the halos between, for I am a grave. You know, nobody theoretically stands over this man telling him what to do. I said the other night about Ben Hart's poetry that it's unfair to do it in one quick cold read. Kind of I speak cozily about it. I include that, this poem in that statement. It's quite remarkable what he does. And again, I don't know what the image of it is.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, your thoughts.
Oh, this is beautiful. It's got brilliant imagery and metaphors. You know, to me, it's a rite that's emotive and epic. I like how, especially at the end, it speaks on spreading your wings to soar along your own path. I always feel like there's something about Ben's writing that speaks to me on self-discovery and the idea of becoming your own person. And I see that in this one, too. And I see it, you know, wanting to be connected with somebody, you know, and at the end, the mother is mentioned and the apology, you know, where he says, I'm sorry I couldn't sit still, mother. I always belonged away. You know, the expectations we feel the weight of to live up to what our parents or other people expect of us and to try to understand yourself. I really liked this all the way through, but especially set me adrift in the dark. I am not believed that you get to be ocean and I only ripple the halos between, for I am unrained and you shall have the heavens, the orchard of stars to grow amongst and thus become a forest afar that in the absence of wind is still swaying. That idea of somebody who learns to find movement to their own beat, to find their own stars to reach for. So beautifully written and very well done.
Great comment there, Pam. Yeah, this is another just very beautiful poem and full of existential melancholy and longing. It pangs the heart, exposing that hole in the soul, that pain, existential pain that comes, I think, with the human condition. And it's also a pain inherent in nostalgia. Like Ulysses, it's a poem of everyday living. And like the novel, it examines the isolation and simultaneously solitude inherent in the poet's journey with the close. Look up and find yourself already flying, no home, I'm not astray. I'm sorry I couldn't sit still, Mother. I always belonged away. And that to me kind of seems like the crux of Stephen's relationship with his mother. And Stephen is a thinly veiled portrait of James Joyce himself. And sure enough, Joyce moved away from Dublin and spent his life as an adult in Europe on the continent. So it hit all sorts of notes for me, and was just very, very moving. Another great job by Ben Hart. Okay, Pam, where would you like to go?
Well, up next we have Sailing the Sea of Past Nightmares into a Brighter Future by Jenny the Deep. Shut your eyes and see. The reality life is nothing but a dangerous, dreary dream. Wake up and see what is right in front of you. It's not always easy traveling life's ocean blue. Sailing this messy odyssey of a lifetime, there is no looking back in the mirror of hindsight. Move past the treacherous, white, swelling waters into a future reflecting on all that has faltered. Geniuses of man even make mistakes, but they accept and endure life's rough, slapping waves, conquer catastrophes caused callously, correcting cruel, conniving, crude fallacies. Persevere through real nightmares. Feel the screaming, sullen storms inside disappear. Sail straight unto morning into a brighter future until penetrating wounds are healed by the sea's salty suture. End poem.
Great read there, Pam. This is another really wonderful poem. I thought there were compelling alliterations that punctuate the poem of philosophical musings and vivid imagistic metaphors. I thought Jenny did a wonderful job here. Really great. And Laurent, your thoughts on this one?
I'll tell you what, can you come right back to me, please?
Sure. Yeah, go ahead, Pam. What'd you think?
Well, first of all, I really like the title. I mean, that is a great lead-in. You know, the alliteration at the end was definitely a tongue twister, but really worked quite well. The alliteration I really liked is conquer catastrophes caused callously, correcting cruel, conniving crudes. Wonderful lines there. Great imagery in this one. I like how that was an excellent write on eyes opened to the truth of mankind's folly, especially throughout history. And while we need to learn from history, we can't remain focused on it. Eventually, we have to realize the importance of moving forward and focusing on the future. And I really like stanza that says, sailing this messy odyssey of a lifetime, there is no looking back in the mirror of hindsight. Move past the treacherous, white, swelling waters into a future reflecting on all that has faltered. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. And yeah, by the way, great job with that, with those alliterations. You tackled them quite skillfully. And Laurent, we'll give you final word.
Yeah, see, the first stanza is what really sets it off for me after some reflection. Shut your eyes and see the reality. Life is nothing but a dangerous, dreary dream. It's a dream in the sense that we have our own personal viewpoint on life. And sometimes we're not aware. And the rest of the world may view something differently from the way we view it. So it can be quite, as he says, a messy odyssey of a lifetime. No looking back in the mirror of hindsight. It doesn't help anything. She uses metaphors very skillfully in this. move past the treacherous white swelling waters. Into the future, reflecting on all that has faltered. Maybe you hit a certain point in your life where everything you've tried hasn't really worked too well. But despite that, save the earth. So this seems to be a poetry of perseverance. In the middle of a bad dream, which involves life. Very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, Pam, sending it back to you.
All right. Well, up next we have Today is the Day by Eric Svensson, and we have a SoundCloud for that.
Yeah, let me pull that.
Said eyes to big toes dig in, support the artist's balance, freeze blue eyes to study misty seascape, cerebral cortex computes composition, attuned heart intuits color application. Inner eardrums interpret foghorn lament, warn solar plexus of tidal change range, bits, pieces, and body parts, harmonious coexistence mobilizes, empowers spirit that dwells within. Well-appointed chambers ensure create.
So I'm going to, I stopped it because I think it is the wrong poem. And instead, it happens. I'm not sure exactly what the mix-up was. It looks like it was the right, we pulled the SoundCloud that Eric wanted us to pull. But it doesn't match the text.
Oh my goodness!
You guys
agree,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So go ahead, Pam. Why don't you sign a reader for us?
Okay. Well, let's see. I think I will go ahead and I read the last one, which means it's Lauren's turn. So Lauren, would you give that a read for us, please?
We're reading Today is the Day?
Yes. Yeah, that's the correct
one. Okay.
Thanks.
Another gestalt day bodes well. Will it end up green bottle slumped and intentions killed? It's inebriating ambrosia decanted. Killed and stumped, blunt by decal-edged sunset. Some non-momento mori ashtray accuses one of the many universe multiverses. Energy should flow where intention is set. Rudimentary rigor mortis and entropy opposes such rude thoughts. Oughts add up to naught. Amputate Achilles' heel immediately. Robust, round, green glass bottle day expands. Quirky quantum field possibilities. Ability of work ethic infuses. Procrastination fracas the culprit. Steerage across black iron waters. Immersion in action. Steady stasis of chilled shabby autumn days. Gestation period of a new poetry anthology. Isms. Damn Achilles' heel chasms, metamorphosis in words, harmonica of muse infused, umbilical cord oscillates, 10 green bottle kiln slumped months to show, poetic ambrosia recanted a megabyte highway. Today, squint through thick spectacle lenses, allocate gold, silver, and bronze and print. Maybe rely on autoright. No front page selection, better ideas. Damn, it's here again. Blooming day spots like the snow goose, of aggressions, black pride, broods like Howard Hughes in isolated gestation. Tick tock, tick tock, tick. Nick Neverland in the bud right now. Drink the steam bottle days in the creating ambrosia. Killed and slumped by TKI at sunset. End quote.
Great read, Laurent. So I have to say, one of the advantages of having done these shows for years, and you guys have done them longer than I have, is you listen to a bunch of SoundClouds over the years of the poets, and you get their cadence, and I think you really did justice, not only as a good reader, but as a good listener to Eric's style, and I think you you did a fine job, so much appreciated. And I thought that Eric's poem was a wonderful riffing off of the prompt, and the prompt was, so in the future, sister of the past, I may see myself as I sit here now, but by reflection from that which then I shall be. Although subtext, the green bottle reminded me of the green fairy absinthe, which was the drink of choice in Joyce's Paris of the 1920s when writing Ulysses. And I especially like Today is the Day, squint through thick spectacle lenses, allocate gold, silver, and bronze in print, maybe rely on auto rank, no front page selection, better idea, which for me suggested a self-awareness, the creative process and a questioning of its very purpose, whether it's audience recognition or, you know, Maslow's self-actualization. I thought it was a laudable work throughout, and great job by Eric, as always. And just an amazing work. And Pam, what'd you think?
Oh, I like this. I really like this, and you did a wonderful read of it, Lauren. You know, as always, you know, the way Eric is able to play with words and phrases and just really have fun with his writing and yet at the same time speak on those kind of universal truths that we all understand. I really felt like in part it was a captivating write on our obsession with praise and acknowledgement from other people and how that becomes our Achilles heel, how that becomes a prison to our soul that we must break free from. I really liked the tick-tock, to acknowledge the passing of time. You know, and I really like a dumb, numb memento mori ashtray accuses one of many multiverses. Energy should flow where intention is set. Rudimentary rigor mortis of entropy opposes such lewd thoughts. And procrastination fracas, the culprit steering across black ire waters, immersion in inaction. I really like how that speaks on the idea that too oftentimes we try to find those mundane distractions to really keep us from finishing what we should, you know. So just an amazing write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And Laurent, as reader, I'll give you final word on the piece.
You know, I have to apologize and I have to admit something. The way I read that, just due to the fact that I have a very bad sore throat and I have a very, very bad toothache at the same time. So it's very difficult for me to talk. And I'm going to pass by this comment because it does hurt right now.
Well, that's okay. We get it. Yeah, it's tough playing hurt. Okay, Pam, I am turning it back to you.
All right, let's see here. Am I off mute? Yes, I am. Good for
you. You are.
All right. Sometimes the best way to discover that is to just ask the question out loud and see if anybody responds. So, all right. Well, up next we have Big Words by Irish Rose. And Richard, would you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. Okay, so this is Irish Rose. I'm sorry, yeah, Irish Rose, and it's called Big Words. And it's inspired by Prompt 5, I Fear Those Big Words, Stephen said, which make us so unhappy. There are certain words, when said to us, that rivet our souls to the ground. Often they're cast in life's cement. Heavy feet can't run their weighted down. When hearing, sorry you have stage 4 cancer, you only have 6 months to live, or war is an imminent outcome, a nuclear holocaust will be its last bridge. Did you really hear those words come dancing and roaring in your ears? Did you catch your breath? Did reality stop? Was your heart frozen and still? Were there images of days gone by, full of loved family and friends, so dear? Or did you become an emotional bag of mush, alienated in realities full of fear? Did you feel your heart pound as life panicked, surging through your veins? Or did your mind race in defiant denial, screaming loudly in your brain? Did your anger rise hot, boiling in disbelief, shouting at that unknown God you never knew? Perhaps this is just a mistake, or it must be make-believe. So the words conversely intersect, colliding with life and death. What was it that we thought we knew about the words and their formidable final impact? End of poem. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Ulysses illustrates the stream of consciousness method of writing. And Gwen has used it in that way, I think. Sentences run pell-mell as they show across the page, surging emotional projection of denial reaction, big words which make us so happy. And what words? Stage 4 cancer, etc. It follows is really very good. The reaction and the message is strong and well-rooted. What was it that we thought we knew about the words? Very handy. It really makes you think. Great piece.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is an amazing heartfelt write. I like how in the end stanza she decides to scatter the words almost as if it's a representation of life falling apart. Powerful, heartfelt lines. I like how it speaks on the impact words have on the spirit. And, you know, as we face our own mortality, because I can, you know, just imagine what it must be like to hear such words as, sorry, you have stage 4 cancer, you only have 6 months to live, war is an imminent outcome, a nuclear holocaust will be its last bridge. And those words and just hearing them and how they make the heart stop. And the mind freeze, and, you know, all of a sudden it feels like every part of your life is in turmoil. And as I was mentioning, it really seems to focus on the idea of how suddenly we're faced with having to grieve for ourselves, and that we are mere mortals and we will eventually come to an end. So amazing write and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. Yeah, I too was very impressed with Gwen's poem. I thought it was a thoughtful exploration of the prompt and the words which make us so happy and all the existential wonderings embedded in such words. Very nicely done throughout. Great poem. Okay, Pam, where would you like to go next?
All right. Well, up next we have The Water Passage by Swimmer of Seas. We tracked it with technology. We fixed our tracing ring in the hope of reading data, the haunted click to sing. She beached in Sandy Cove, 1,000 souls did track, and a sea of rhyming couplets love just brought her back. Her enigmatic measure with pen as gambler's stake. Once I thought she smiled at me as eyes did surface break. She gambles in the salty brine where the constant reader lives, concurrent with veracity as much as accuracy forgives. The new fleets of media near hunt her to the brink, yet she thrives where no man dives, a thirst beyond a drink. End poem.
Great read there, Pam. Yeah, I thought this was a strong riffing off of the nautical tropes of Ulysses, and it really is a poem, a novel, which is firmly planted in nautical tropes. If you think about it, I think episode 3, for sure Proteus, and then later in the novel, if you look at, certainly the sirens, and it just goes on and on. A lot of it is connected to the sea. I also like the rhymes, which were atypical and were quite satisfying to the ear, and I thought you did a great job of bringing it to life, actually, as well there, Pam. So a nice nautical write to bring us into the right frame to understand a little bit deeper what Joyce is offering in Ulysses. Very nicely done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
The whole thing for me is that almost encapsulated in the last stanza. In the fleets of media, near hunter to the brink, it should thrive so no man dies, a thirst beyond a drink. You know, I think Pam called it a search for knowledge that every poet has to make, and I agree with that. It's well done. I like the metaphor a great deal.
Great comment. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I really liked this one. I too enjoyed the rhyme. I thought it was really cool, the wordplay in it. And hearing both of you comment, I think helped me to understand the poem a little better and its connection with James Joyce's Ulysses. But I still definitely enjoyed this poem when I read it to myself earlier today. And you know, it really spoke to me on that search for knowledge, which oftentimes the poet can only find by going to great depths. There's wonderful imagery and metaphors in this. You know, there's almost a sense of being teased by what's just out of reach. And one thing I like in poetry oftentimes is consistency with theme. And you brought this up, Richard, is that there's a consistency in the nautical theme, which connects quite well with the novel and with the idea that there is this connection that mankind has to the ocean and to water throughout history. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Excellent comment. Great. And where would you like to go next?
All right. Well, up next we have Shut Your Eyes and See by the Warrior Poet. And Laurent, will you give that a read for us, please?
Shut your eyes and see through the bars of your jail cell as all Ireland's sins are washed away by the Gulf Stream, its warming waters splashing like raindrops through the bars as I speak. Ashes melts my skin. I can only dream of the freedom inside my soul, fighting its way out of this damp, dark hellhole. The war is taking hold. We're all dying, lost in Flanders mud, sliced on the wire, leaving only our blood, insects and flies, munching into our bones, eating layer by layer of skin, rats running riot, too hot, drop. They eat us, and we eat them, scraping maggots from our skin, wounds open, the pain is lost within. Trenchful, screaming voices, death all around, blood splashing. Nope, not mine. Shut your eyes, see the fairy lights dancing up in the sky, then falling like acid rain burning your skin, as the sparks sink into him. Where are we going? What have we done? War is not freedom. The prison we're in, looking out to the bars, the only death, people, destroying families, children dying in the street, bodies all over. No arms, no unexploded bombs that are in our streets. Catching people, unaware, blowing their feet, don't kick a tin can. It may be the last time. Too many bombs, too little time, too little.
Great read, Laurent. Yeah, this is a really powerful poem. I like how the poet placed the piece between Bloomsday, 1904, and the publication of Ulysses, right smack dab in the thick of the Great War's Western Front, and brought trench warfare to startling life with lines like sliced on the wire, leaving only our blood, insects and flies munching into our bones, eating layer up on layer of skin, rats running riot into the stew pot. Yeah, people tend to forget that although Ulysses was published in 1922, it was written, part of it was written during the Great War, and it's definitely of that era, and the poet does a great job of showing us that and putting in context of the quote quite nicely. I thought it was an atypical use because, you know, in that chapter, in that episode, the Proteus episode, Stephen is actually walking along Sandy Mount Strand, and he's shutting his eyes because that's what the blind do, and shutting your eyes and seeing as the blind, and the poet uses that as a metaphor to see beyond what is, you know, is everyday life, and to show us the horror of what's inside and what's beyond everyday life, and specifically the horror of war. So I thought it was a really great poem. And Pam, your thoughts?
I really like this one. It is a powerful write. I really appreciate how visceral he went with his imagery. And I think that was important considering the subject matter. I mean, because war is a horrifying and ugly thing, and it should have ugly words to describe it, you know. And I really like inside. I can only but dream of the freedom inside my soul fighting its way out of this damp, dark hellhole. The war is taking over. We're all dying, lost in Flanders mud, sliced on the wire, leaving only our blood, insects and flies munching on our bones. And then, you know, where it down reminds us, I see only death, people destroying families, children dying in the streets. It's not just the soldiers that die. It's the innocent, the children, the families. You know, there's definitely an impact with this poem, and beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. And Laurent, as reader, I'll give you final word.
The First World War ushered in a crop of poets and people writing poetry. That was a real step forward for the field, I think. It really introduced more than a little realism, brutal realism sometimes. My feeling is an example of that. Don't take it as in canon, maybe the last time. There's a line that really struck me. That's about all.
Nice comment.
You know, I got to ask if I can read my piece fairly soon because I love myself.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. You know what? I'll go ahead and I'll grab your piece. Let me just find that. There we go. Because that is no problem. I understand what it's like to get tired and not be feeling well. So.
Well, it's funny. I've had a toothache, you know, all day. I've been dealing with that. But the sore throat all of a sudden came out of nowhere. Going, something hurts more than my teeth. What the hell is it? Then I realized it was my throat. My granddaughter just went to the doctor today, and she has strep throat, and I'm wondering if I don't have the same thing.
Oh, goodness. I hope that's not. But, whenever you're ready, Laurent, I went ahead and put your poem up. Go ahead and give it a read.
I appreciate the understanding. They exist. Bright suburban morns drown in the new age of super cycle streamers. Heated you crowns of thorns. Old voices, a new aspect. Making it all great again. They protect their truth, unassailing the facade of gray and dominant is their thought, collecting the formerly unelected, gifted in gestures and violence of power. They shut their eyes, pretending to see, blank-faced and crapped out their worlds. With life and scared shitless. So the coming move would not be heard. After lunch, Aristophanes, where are you now? Lucky lad of long ago. Your name is still an indiscriminator of the century. You are an immortal. Your opinion, please, on our everyone lives in rooms of stones, thrown and be thrown at architecture. You don't have to go to school for that. Talent bearing on all circumstances, offered at birth as birthright in the Constitution. Bother the fast food calls, loud squawking things, blocks of infinite triplets, quadruplets, umpteen uplets, all looking vaguely belligerent, but far too eager. Roll up the window. Gnomes hill, home to the concrete spires supporting elevated highways, where information and temptation creates future grips, sewn shut as a living, buying breath, as it were. And in between, skittish dogs, ribcage starving, prowl the outskirts of misery. Dirty dust into night, pistol-whipped evening, flashes, blooded stink, gaudy, loud, vulgar, brick-to-the-face noise, hammer hands, all protected territories. Hard rock portraits leave in whiskey smoke. Cracked knuckle scars, tents, glasses, brimful of honey fire. Terminal stop at the roars spit, garbage flame, alive in barrels. Rusted through skeletons, warming their gathered kin. Needles slide into puckered flesh, gripped by bliss. Hallelujah is weak. Three meals cost the missing saints and salvation's guard. Repents, breathing bodies busted, broken bits assembled under the traffic flash of super cycle screamings. Screaming home, making the Wall Street nut. Never glance at the twisted beaten beneath. Never aware they exist. End quote.
Wonderful read and write there, Laurent. I thought it was a great riffing off of the prompt. I like how you twisted the literal shutting of eyes into a metaphorical shutting down to truth and Trumpism, or that whole ilk of authoritarianism that's reared its ugly head, is skewered quite brilliantly throughout. So I thought it was a great speaking of truth to power as well. And I like that phrase, supercycle screamers. And I know that you responded to my comment that it reminded me of Ralph Nelson Elliott's Grand Supercycle, but wasn't necessarily inspired by that. But either way, I thought it was a dark and powerful offering of poetry and a wonderful add to our celebration of Bloomsday. Great job. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, first of all, great read. As always, an impressive write, brilliant with its imagery and metaphors. I, too, really liked how you took the idea of the shut your eyes and see on that metaphorical level, that idea of denial. Hard-hitting social commentary on the twisted and blind paths that we allow ourselves to easily be led down. I particularly like pistol-whipped evening flashes its blood and stink, gaudy, loud, vulgar, brick-to-the-face noise, hammer hands prowl, protected territories. And then hallelujah is weak, free meals cost to listen to saints in salvation garb, repent and recant. wonderful commentary on there in the on the violence of the world, but also the hypocrisy of those who offer up no more kindness than a hallelujah and a flippant prayer. So just, wow, amazing lines all the way through, Laurent, and very well done.
Thank you, both of you. I appreciate that. To answer your question or your comment about super cycle screamers, the phrase evolved from the fact that so much of what we hear today from politicians and would-be politicians is a lot of screaming. They seem to scream in cycles, you know, off and on, depending. And then super cycle screamers just kind of suggested itself. But what is the super cycle that you referred to? Could you just elaborate on it?
Yeah. So Ralph Nelson Elliott in the 1930s came up with this idea of the grand super cycle, which is basically an economic cycle. And it would, you know, start with a recovery and then a boom and then a kind of like hysteria and then a crash. Yeah. And he believed that we had, had one in the 20s and 30s. And then people that subscribed to him thought we were going to have, after 1987, when the stock market crashed, that we would have another one. It didn't really happen. And, you know, it's confusing, this stuff, really hard to predict. And he was, I think, influenced by this Russian who ended up in the gulag because he was called, his name was Kondratiev. And he came up with, again, this idea of super cycle. And it played well that capitalism would result in this depression, economic crash. But what they didn't like, what Stalin didn't like, was that there would be a recovery afterwards. So he put him in the gulag.
Mm-hmm.
So. Oh, my goodness.
Typically Russian.
Yeah. So, but, yeah, so it kind of played that way, too, and it kind of made sense that way if you think of it, that, you know, the economic cycle.
Yeah.
And screaming about it. So, yeah, great work. And thanks so much for joining us. I know that you have been feeling under the weather, and we appreciate you taking the time to celebrate Bloom's Day with us.
I'll stick around for another one or two.
Okay, great. Sounds good to me. Okay, Pam, I see you have the next one up.
Yes, I have The Black Hole by S. Sharp, and we have a SoundCloud for that one.
Yep, let me play it. Oh, I see it. It's all the way up there.
The Black Hole. Time, ruler of mankind, measuring stick of Cronos. Equal inches, plotted like a graph, cinch Orion's belt, where Einstein scribbles numbers in the nether of consciousness. Amber chalk on dark matter, fires burning in the eyes of Ion. Billy Pilgrim astride today, tomorrow, and yesterday, witnesses all. Libertas atop Aventine Hill, like the great lady stands over upper New York Bay, sister to Colossus, parallel lines along the seven beams of light in the mind of man. Quasars explode into eternity, escaping the black hole of time.
Thank you for the SoundCloud, Scott. Great job. I thought this was excellent riffing off of the prompt. I like the literary allusions as well as the paradoxical feel for the enormity of the human experience, tempered by the poet's illumination of the smallness of our place in the universe vis-a-vis the quasars and black holes. Very nicely done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
I'm going to agree with you. Basically, that's what it is. Said it well enough that I can ride you. Piggyback. Thank you.
Okay, we'll take it. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this one is great. As always, Scott does a wonderful read. He's got a very powerful reading voice. I like how he brings mythology into this, and the opening lines are wonderful. Time, ruler of mankind, measuring stick of Kronos, equal inches plotted like a graph, cinch Orion's belt. I thought this had amazing imagery and metaphors and was an excellent write on mankind's obsession to control and understand time. And as you said, Richard, it really speaks on the idea of our place in the universe being so small, and you know, which is just such a humbling thought. I really like Upper New York, like the great lady stands over Upper New York Bay, sister to Colossus, parallel lines. Who's that female poet that wrote the great Colossus?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Emma Lazarus.
Yes. I'm horrible at names, but I knew when I was reading that part that it made me think of that particular poem by, as you said, Emma Lazarus. So, you know, I thought that was really cool how it kind of approached that idea of trying to find our place and thinking we're much grander than we actually are. So excellent write and very well done.
Mm-hmm. Great comment there, Pam. Okay, and where would you like to go next?
All right. Let's see here. Grabbing the next one, and up next, I'm going to put your poem, Richard. So go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay. So this is called Walking into Eternity. All along the strand, Stephen edges, past temporal lobes and transient sandbars to nowhere, waiting beneath Roman candle bursts and streams of raining gold hair threads, greeny, dewy stars, all melt away dewily neath the gray Irish sea air, while Bloom's groin leaps to his throat impulsively, compulsively, for Gertie McDowell as she leans back to reveal names, knickers barely cloaking her yawning crotch, long flash, approaching eternity, till it's once again hidden beneath her thin blouse. The yawping Irish blue. Up now, four-legged ever crawl out from foam of Dublin Bay, evolving, mutating before Stephen's sense-seeking lenses as he asks, am I walking into eternity along Sandy Mount Strand while the sea and all its pulsing life stands muted by Stephen's unanswerable wonderings. End of poem.
Wonderful read and write there, Richard. Very impressive. And Laurent, if you're still with us, your thoughts?
Yeah. Am I walking into eternity along Sandy Mount Strand, by the sea and all its pulsing life, stands muted by Stephen's unanswerable wonderings. And they are, too. And I like the way you did that, especially all melts away, dewily, neath the gray Irish sea air, while Bloom's groin leaps to his throat impulsively, for Gertie McDowell, as he leans back to reveal Lane silk knickers barely cloaking her yawning crotch. Long flash approaching eternity, though it's once again hidden beneath a thin blouse of yawping Irish blue. You and your words, especially yawping. The last time I heard yawping was in a Dr. Seuss poem, quite frankly. I'm delighted to encounter it here. The descriptive quality of that moment in the examination of Gertie McDowell, I thought was really, really well carried out. I enjoyed that a great deal as well as I did the poem.
Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment, Lawrence. Yeah, I really like this. I like how you take some of the main characters of the novel and create a vision around them. And the imagery and metaphors are absolutely wonderful. A great focus on the search for eternity and an understanding for what's beyond the simplicity of this life. I like the gritty and reality brought in while Bloom's groin leaps to his throat impulsively, compulsively for Gertie McDowell as she leans back to reveal Nain Sook Knickers barely cloaking her yawning crotch. And then at the same time that that's going on, there's this looking out at the ocean and this thinking back to the evolution of mankind and getting to the point we're at and wondering, you know, is there more to it all? Mutating before Stephen's sense-seeking lenses as he asks, am I walking into eternity along Sandy Mount Strand? I like that you fit the quote in, but it fit in so naturally that it didn't feel forced, while the sea and all its pulsing life stands muted by Stephen's unanswerable wonderings. You know, sometimes our own thoughts are so loud that we can't hear anything or anyone around us. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Thanks so much to you both. Yeah, and I think your comments were spot on, absolutely what I was trying to convey, which was the kind of paradox that here we are, you know, walking into eternity and thinking about all these deep thoughts and simultaneously and embedded into all of that is this very kind of, you know, gritty sexuality that's part of the human experience as well, and the paradox of looking up at the stars and then looking into a woman's, you know, knickers as she's leaning back, and it just kind of felt like the essence of what Ulysses is. Okay, Pam, I see you have the next one up.
I do. I went ahead and put up my poem, which I made a SoundCloud for. So if you don't mind, go ahead and play that.
Absolutely. Okay, where are we? It's right here somewhere. I got it.
Marshland birds and cracks in the glass. Her clothes drop to the floor, wrinkled and sweaty from a hard day of work, selling eggs and potatoes, jars of homemade huckleberry jam, and loaves of brown bread. Now she is naked, Lilith running from the shelter of the Godhead, blushing and plump in the arms of her lover. He grows hard for her, writhing snake, howling beast, a farmer's tan, and the guilt of a saint. Her hair is wild curls, cinnamon incense, navy blue eyes, ships sailing in their depths. She is never completely here, drifting in wanderlust desires of ancient lands and dead languages, spreading herself across the bed, limbs miming the dance of lust,
he comes to her, guiding his ache into the crack of her looking glass, singing the songs of marshland birds, black wings, and a red sky tied together in a land of famine that haunts the heart. End poem.
Wonderful SoundCloud there, Pam, and an amazing poem. I have to say that this is one of my favorites that you've brought to us. I like how you took the archetypal male and female of Genesis, and guessing that I'm going to look 15 and 10. Hold on one second.
Sorry.
Yeah, so, yeah, here it is. So here's 10, which is, yeah, exactly. Spouse and helpmate of Adam Cadman. Heva, naked Eve. She has no navel, gaze, belly without blemish, bulging big, buckler, taut vellum, no white heat corn, orient and immortal, standing from everlasting to everlasting. So yeah, you kind of ran with the Adam and Eve and took it into wonderful, wonderful creative realms. You took that archetype, recast it into Irish art in a similar fashion to Joyce himself recasting Odysseus and Penelope into 1904 Dublin. I thought this was truly a beautiful piece of poetry. Really well done.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're quite welcome. And I know that Laurent has dropped. He wasn't feeling well, but we do thank him for spending part of his Thursday evening with us on the air. And yeah.
Yeah, and thank you so much for the inspiration.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm glad it worked out. It really seemed to work for you. This was a wonderful piece of poetry. And was there anything that you wanted to add about it?
You know what? First of all, your prompt for great inspiration and your comment was very much spot on what I was trying to do. I mean, I don't honestly know if they have huckleberries in Ireland, but I thought, well, what? Why not? It sounds, you know, I took some poetic liberties there, and I wanted to create two characters that represented the working class of Ireland in that particular time period. And I at first wasn't intending for it to have the sensuality that it did, but for some reason, and I don't know if this sounds odd or not, I mean, I've never completely read Joyce, but I read enough about him and enough of his quotes to always feel like there's a certain aspect of sensuality within him and a certain aspect for the appreciation of how sex is a part of the everyday life. And so, you know, I just decided to bring that into the right because, you know, when you come home from a hard day of work and you're poor and you don't have much else to do, well, why not turn to each other, right? So I hope that makes sense.
It does. Pulled it off really well. Great job. Okay. Where would you like to go next? Absolutely.
All right. Well, up next we have Now Open by Weaver of Dreams. And you have a SoundCloud for that.
I do. Here we go.
Close your insightful eyes. Open your inquiring mind. See all and connect. Send out tentative tendrils to explore the misty unknown of the uncharted ethereal plane. Lose yourself within this labyrinth of aspirations. Attune, absorb, assimilate. While you accept it, your path will always be walked alone. Remember, my love for you will remain constant. I could not tell you all I thought, nor would I tell you all the truth. To know would only hurt you, break your tender heart.
Thank you for the SoundCloud Weaver of Dreams. And I thought this was a wonderful piece. Very satisfying. I liked that the I could either be a lover or a higher power, and that the poem works both as a love poem and as a spiritual, inspirational piece. And in that way, it kind of reminded me of the Song of Solomon from the Old Testament. Great piece, very, very kind of classical approach to the prompt. Very well done. And Pam, your thoughts on this one?
Well, those were great observations there. And yeah, I can definitely see that. The idea of the being connected to either a love or a physical love, an earthly one, or a spiritual higher power. I thought this had wonderful imagery and metaphors. It's a beautiful rite on seeking realms beyond the surface of the mind, but also knowing that some people are too sensitive to the truth unveiled, and we must learn when and how to hold back on revealing too much of ourselves. But I do like how, as you mentioned, this speaks on the idea of walking by someone, staying by someone. Remember, my love for you will remain constant. You know, that's such a wonderful, heartfelt line of reassurance in trying to understand something that can often be difficult to grasp. So excellent write and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And yeah, you know, isn't it interesting if you think about, like, if it is a higher power, right? How if I tell you all the truth, no, would only hurt you, break your tender heart, right? If we were to get the big picture of what the higher power in their perspective of our life was, that it might be too much for us, you know?
Oh, yeah. It would be extremely
right?
overwhelming.
Yeah,
exactly.
And so better. Yeah, and so that actually she's saying, you know, I'm holding back, and it's actually for your benefit. So I liked it that way, too.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, and with that, we'll move to the next one.
All right. Well, up next we have Within the Wake of Wider Gyres, by Robert J. Tice. And would you give that a read for us, please, Richard?
Absolutely. This is called Within the Wake of Wider Gyres by Robert J. Tice, the shock of horror shows. Still graveyards quaked by grating bones, gaunt houses paced by aimless wraiths. The exorcism's writhing eyes, an attic racked by rattled bats, or howling hellhounds gaining ground. More gruesome truth comes slouching round, monstrosities of negligence, of errors, terrors, archetypes of our design, which cannot die because we will them back to life, our worst decisions. History, calamities, past, undead, those zombie misdeeds which must be fed on numb and unsuspecting brains, whose thoughts flee most alarming things, while sleepwalkers scoff heedlessly by calendars since years behind. Though no day makes a holiday, from longing, war, mistakes, disgrace, delusion, loss of innocence, or lessons never learned in time. Now yesterday's claw back and wail, tomorrow's not another tale. Who's brave to wake us from our days? who knows the dawning from a blaze, which revolution sets us free from circles of catastrophe. Where may we cease or dream once more? Now Frankenstein bangs down our door. End of poem. Okay, Pam, I'm turning it over to you. What do you think of this one?
Oh, I like this one all the way through. I mean, it's another one that has powerful and visceral imagery throughout. I did like that he put a little bit of information in his AN that, first of all, Wake in the poem's title is also an intentional reference to Joyce's Finnegan's Wake, and Wilder Dyer's is also an intentional allusion to William Butler Yeats' The Second Coming. Just amazing imagery and metaphors, a powerful and hard-hitting write on the history that we continue to not learn from, and, you know, that continually gets repeated to the point where, you know, we become, I like the reference to now Frankenstein bangs down our door, as if we are made of various pieces of history that have created in mankind one just horrible monster that has come to life and yet has no understanding of humanity. So I really like that ending. Plus, I really like more gruesome truths come slouching round, monstrosities of negligence, of errors, terrors, archetypes of our design, which cannot die because we will them back to life, our worst decisions, history. Powerful lines and very well done.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I have to say, the rhyming was just phenomenal. I tried to do my best with it, and I think it came across that this really was kind of melt-in-your-mouth poetry, which in and of itself is always quite an accomplishment. So that alone was just eye-poppingly good. And then the material that's covered, I thought, was strong and layered. And I thought the rhyming offering riffed well off the prompt while simultaneously alluding to Yeats, The Second Coming, Finnegan's Wake, Joyce's later novel, and even to Shelley's Frankenstein, all of which questions whether modernity and specifically technological advances of modern man perpetuates history's nightmare. Because, you know, Joyce's Ulysses is considered to be the modernist poem. The modernist novel. And the lines, longing, war, mistakes, disgrace, delusion, loss of innocence, punctuate history's nightmare. I thought it was a really great offering. Very well done. Okay, Pam, I see you've got the next one.
All right. Yes. Up next, we have Big Words by Peter Solway. Cause of malady, melancholia's pronouncement, fat from dictionary, obese with multiple meanings. Adolf in the spring, Jewish doctor, certainly looking happy to charge. Cyclops to sign, Mozart to murder. A deaf Beethoven score, holidays spent skiing, swift cognition, let loose from summit, not syllable more to ponder, all like fornication, cunningless, mutual masturbation, active existentialism, no more, all the naked natives gone, Charles to bemoan, firm bras for everyone, Chinese coming, ping-pong phobia, starring son of sausage, studying advanced melanoma, outside great red hammer and sickle hardware store, set to corner the market on grammar, end poem.
Great read, Pam. I thought this was a Joycean offering indeed, bawdy and surreal with wordplay that would have made the master modernist smile. I especially liked outside Great Red Hammer and Sickle hardware store set to corner the market on grammar. I thought it was very kind of humorous and highly intelligent offering that would have made Joyce smile, I think. And your thoughts, Pam?
You know what? I absolutely have to agree. It was something I think James Joyce would greatly appreciate. As you said, it was bawdy. It has humor. It has a bite to it. Strong imagery and metaphors. I really thought this was creative and intriguing and spoke to me in a humorous way on the idea of using the people who use those large words in order to distract the masses who play with words in order to create confusion. So just an absolutely wonderful write and very well done.
Yeah, and you know, Joyce, people, one of the things that they say about Joyce is that he's pedantic or that he's pretentious, but he himself had the ability to kind of poke fun at his own stuff, and his nickname for Ulysses was Useless. So he saw, you know, that the big words were not really that important. And he didn't take himself too seriously, although sometimes in his darker moments he did. One of my great Joyce stories that I love so much is when Kafka came out with The Trial. It just like pained Joyce to his heart that everyone was talking about this other writer besides him. So in that way, I think he took it seriously. But.
Oh, yep, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, wasn't Ulysses Ulysses was one of those books that got tried for being vulgar at the time, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, it was banned in the United States, and certain parts of it are really, really rough. I mean, even by today's standards, you know, the Penelope episode at the end has some really heavy pornography in it. But it's not really just, I mean, I don't think it's a pornographic book in general. I think instead it's about life. Life includes sexuality. So he wanted to include everything. So.
Absolutely.
And,
absolutely.
Yep. And I see you've got our next one up.
I do. Yes. A Sweep by Rod Heath. And go ahead, please, Richard, and give that a read for us.
Okay, this is A Sweep by Rod Heath. I sum of the current 54 years, 19,700 days, the near split, cuddled, fed, and protected, grew to 165 centimeters. Days and centimeters of life twisted as a herringbone, fogged, truant brain relishing hide and seek, negativity varnishing inches of malice, mirror shrinking reflection a few centimeters, guilt strapping the stress, some days scrubbed, squeaky clean, monsters of misdeeds on a soporific break, lathery foam toting up in air, obsequiously touching some with kindness, image stretching the shrunk centimeters, beaming smile of towering happiness as the bloom of the jacarandas, the impish youth, the helmetless rides, the band triples on the scooter, foolish grins at traffic police, puncturing teachers' bikes, blind to repercussions, peeping gray streaks, henna at the roots, camera fooled, poses galore, striving side angles, camouflage bugles, coated wrinkles, the indiscreet youth smirking, real swipes fast forward, the supportive mother, the thoughtful daughter, the friendly sister, the reliable wife, the irritating mother, the sulking daughter, the mischievous sibling, the nagging wife, the uncensored acts of my script. Abseiling towards 20,000 days, encapsulated to decipher the number of centimeters partitioned for light and darkness, mathematics, the textbook donated after 10th grade, juggling after half a century on the planet, still decoding, remonstrating, rising, sulking, smiling. Some encounters with self surprise me. Some nag as a buzz of cicadas, muscling to move on, competent to realize. Subtraction or division incompletes me. Addition, multiplication of goodness forms a perfect whole of whole. End of poem. Okay, Pam, go ahead. What'd you think?
Wow. First of all, that was a wonderful read there. I tell you, I'm going to have to check out more of Rod Hughes' work. This was extremely impressive. Amazing imagery and metaphors throughout. I like how there's a consistency in tone and truly a thought-provoking write on how we desperately try to measure time and to measure self-growth, and how oftentimes that measurement happens by the people that we come across in our life, but also by the events, even the small ones of life can really start to add up. You know, I really like juggling after half a century on the planet, still decoding, remonstrating, rising, sulking, smiling, some encounters with self-surprise, and some nag as buzz of cicadas. And I like how that speaks on the idea of, you know, what do we learn from each event? And are there some that we're supposed to be thinking more on? And are there some that we're supposed to be letting go? So truly an impressive write on life and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I too really like this one. I thought it was an ambitious offering of poetry that in many ways encapsulates Joyce's Ulysses in panoramic shorthand. That was the first thing that I looked at when I was examining the poem, was which prompt. And then I got it, that it's really trying to capture the whole novel in this kind of panoramic shorthand. And to me, it seems the opening lines, I sum of the current 54 years, 19,700 days, hints at the Nestor episode early in the book, where Stephen tries to teach sums to Sargent, as well as the first episode, Telemachus, in which Mulligan taunts Stephen with, he proves by algebra that Shakespeare's ghost is Hamlet's grandfather. The number of days, I think, is a reference to Bloomsday itself and how Joyce's novel takes place on a single day, June 16th in 1904. I also liked the supportive mother, thoughtful daughter, the friendly sister, the reliable wife, the irritating mother, the sulking daughter, the mischievous sibling, the nagging wife, the uncensored acts of my script, in which the poet shows us the multifaceted aspects of all humans and specifically their polarities, which I believe Joyce does as well, at least for the main characters, Bloom and Molly and Stephen. I thought it was really, really well thought out and executed. A great poem. Okay,
oh,
Pam, I think thanks. I think we got time for one more. What do you think?
Absolutely. Sounds good to me. Well, I believe that was, let me double check because I hate to miss anybody, but I think that was all of the ones from this year's contest. So I'll put up one from a past contest. And this is Dystopia Now, A Journey by Ted Pilot. Wiping the sleep from my eyes, I unfold the morning newspaper. Page one, the land of milk and honey flows with rivers of blood. What spoke of Zarathustra, I wonder, millennia after the Son of Man set, his children still fall as nightfall, the crumbling, waiting, wailing wall breaks the puzzle, cutting linked arms through the middle, while Korashikor balloons, the flock kneel to pray and drool at the ivory hooves of plump golden calves. Starvation, drought, plague, and postmodernism terrorize the collapsing twin state towers. Page three, Huxley's foresight in the past, now planted firmly at our door. Unchained marketplace laying bare, the merchandise on full display. Through screen shop windows, merchants pick and choose their prized brown boars off the board with their fingers spread like beach umbrellas planted in cross-contaminating pies. Page 16, dead Hector Peterson sprawled in the arms of his older friend is spread across the page through the annual commemorative picture lacks the shock and alarm it had back then. Native tongue still called, shadows of the dark colonial past, evergreen, blackening Luther's rainbow dream. Heads are slow to rise on this bank holiday day, heavy with hangovers from the previous evening, spent boozing in pubs and nightclubs. As I take a mid-morning walk through turnstiles of crossroad people wearing hanging cerebrius styled canvas masks, my trek is uphill on Mount Vesuvius, a path in the balance, along streets in the venomous valley of death, riddled with gray-faced stalking skeletons and vultures perched on leafless mahogany trees. Druid elixirs give wings to my strides as I hurtle across carcass-sharp obstacles. Unwavering, I hurtle towards my destination, thirsting for the land of milk and honey in the shade under tangerine and blood orange painted sunny skies. In the distance, I hear harp strings and pan flutes ring, floating as ballerinas do across a stage while I navigate a game of chess beneath a melting backdrop of the persistence of memory and symmetrical triangular spiked glass shard structures set along the piss-stained streets. Charmed by tribal football chants and the floating bubbles and pint glasses under the peering camera wall of plants, Big Brother plays I Spy on the masses, telescopic voyeurism in homes, peeping Tom ambushes sacred places. With beeping radar collars they roam, vapor seeping in each crevice and space, always awake and always watching, shadows moving past bedtime as they sleep, puppeteers of dictionary meanings, division cheerleaders with shady motifs, diversion smiles on television, yes, thumbs up for low tower corporations, yes, and poem.
Great read, Pam, and not an easy one to read either. And this is just a testament to the quality of work that we got last year when we had this contest, is that this is just a fantastic poem. Didn't get the gold because there were so many fantastic poems. But this is a gold-worthy poem, no question about it. Truly an odyssey indeed, inspired by Joyce's modernist classic, yet simultaneously uniquely the poet's own voice. The poet brings the archetypal spirit of classical journey and move Times Neil Ford from Joyce's modernist portrayal of 1904 Dublin, the metamodernism of today with collapsing twin state towers and peering camera wall plants of Big Brother and division cheerleaders with shady motifs. Those are really nice mix of classicism and, you know, contemporary society. So excellent job. And what did you think of it, Pam?
Oh, this was truly an epic write. And, you know, even though it was not an easy one to read, it was so worth it. Great poem to have at the end of the show. I like the references to the postmodernism and how, as you were mentioning, he brings us forward in time and to the collapsing of the Twin Towers and the idea of how, especially with the internet and technology, there's very little privacy in today's world. It's truly a thought-provoking write on modern times and where we've come and whether or not, you know, the advancement has truly been worth it. I really like, in the distance, I hear sharp strings and pan flutes ring, floating as ballerinas do across the stage while I navigate a game of chess beneath a melting backdrop of the persistence, memory, and symmetrical triangular spiked glass shard structures set along the piste. Sorry, it just speaks on, you know, trying to remember the beauty while dealing with the ugliness and the stench of life. You know, so wonderful, right, and very well done.
Absolutely. And I did a check, actually, because I was surprised it didn't meddle. And one of our rules is that if it's over 350 words, we invite them to read it, to have it read on the air. But it's not fair because it's competing with shorter poems. And that was the case with this when it was over 350 words.
Oh, okay.
Thinking,
that makes sense to me.
Yeah. So I was thinking, boy, this is a really good poem. I'm surprised. And that was what happened. But a wonderful piece, and I'm so glad we had a chance to read it again. Nice way to end the evening. So, Pam, I know that you've got another show in a half an hour.
Yes, Break On Through with Pam and Rex. And we are actually, the majority of our show is going to be carryovers from a few different shows. But I also put that people were welcome to share either open, abstract, or surrealism, because that's a lot of what Break On Through is about. And many of the prompts I try to offer up are either abstract or surrealist in nature. So that's what we got going on. Poetry readers and commenters, always welcome.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, surrealism and abstract, right up my alley. So I wanted to thank Laurent for joining us. I want to thank Fill My Eyes for helping out in the background and making everything work. I want to thank you, Pam, for your help. And last but not least, thank our poets. Without you guys, there is no show. And every 2 weeks, you guys deliver, and we appreciate it. Okay. Thank you again, Pam. Really appreciate you helping out. Okay, we are off the air.